From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The bailout program keeping the Greek economy on life support ends today. Months of talks have broken down after Athens rejected the latest proposal from creditors and called a referendum asking the Greek people to decide their future in the Eurozone. Greeks are emptying ATMs of euros and financial markets look shaky. This hour on Point, Greece on the brink and the future of the Eurozone. You can join us on air or online. What's the way forward here for Greece, for Europe? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Later this hour, we go to Puerto Rico, also on the brink of default. But first, joining me from Athens is Matina Stevens, reporter for The Wall Street Journal. She's covered the Eurozone closely. Matina, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. Negotiations between Greece, its creditors, and the EU have been long and drawn out. Tell us what the latest is as we go to air today.
Well, actually, just before getting on the phone to you, two things seem to happen. First is that the Greek government, which walked off the negotiating table at the end of last week and quite dramatically announced a referendum, has now gone back to the Eurozone bailout fund and is suggesting that it would like a new two-year bailout program, which they would like to be accompanied by a debt restructuring as well, given that Greece's debts are largely considered unpayable. Now, this seems to be an 11th-hour effort by the Greek government to get a better deal. The first responses to this is that it seems highly unlikely that it will get it, given the bad blood that's been created in the negotiations over the last 5 months. Reuters news agency is also transmitting that Angela Merkel, the German chancellor, who is effectively in charge of the strongest woman in Europe and the strongest leader in Europe, has said that there will be no new development on Greece today. So she's already poured cold water all over that. But this is all, of course, developing.
Mm. So a new two-year proposal from Greece calling for parallel debt restructuring. You talked about the bad blood between the EU, between the IMF. What do you think happens now? I mean, so much talk, so long. Is this just going to be rejected out of hand?
To be honest with you, technically and legally, Greece is within its rights to make this new request that it's made. And even if people in Brussels and in Berlin and, around Europe are keen to reject it, it needs to be examined because Greece, as a member of the Eurozone, the common currency area, is actually entitled to request a bailout formally. So the counterparties have to formally show that they will consider this. However, this government came in 5 months ago with a mandate to negotiate, but to keep the country in the euro. We've seen the negotiations have really, been drawn, taken to the brink and eventually collapsed on Friday. And right now, I don't think there's anyone in the Eurozone who really wants to negotiate a new program with this government. And European leaders have said that this government doesn't really have any credibility as a negotiating partner. Mm. I think this kind of blow-by-blow sort of brinkmanship and game of chicken will continue until the end of the week, which, to be honest, is just compounding the atmosphere of confusion, concern, and panic that I'm seeing in Athens and the rest of the country. And people are going into a referendum of historical importance in this kind of mindset of confusion and fear. Mm.
Let me play some sound here from the Greek Prime Minister, Alexis Tsipras, telling Greek state television that he does not think the Eurozone will cut Greece off from the shared currency. Here he is, translated by NPR.
I do not believe they want to kick us out of the Eurozone, he said. They won't do it because the cost will be tremendous.
You talked about a game of chicken here. It's a dangerous game of chicken, Matina Stevens.
Exactly. And I really believe that a lot of many of the people who voted for Mr. Tsipras, but also people who didn't vote for Mr. Tsipras 5 months ago, we're actually in the early stages of this negotiation. We're keen to see a Greek government that stood up a bit taller to Greece's creditors. Remember, this is a country that's been in one of the worst financial crises in modern history for 5 years. People have lost a lot here. And they did want to see a government that stands up to creditors. However, the people I've been talking to here in Greece for the last few days are increasingly feeling that he's pushed it a bit too far. Now, Mr. Tsipras insists that if the Greeks go to the referendum on Sunday and vote no, which would mean that they would be rejecting this allegedly last-ditch deal offer that the creditors are making, they will not, the country will not be kicked out of the euro. However, on the contrary, Mr. Tsipras' hand will be strengthened in driving a stronger negotiation. Now, this is an assumption, or rather, this is an assumption Mr. Tsipras is making. And I have to say, a lot of Greeks actually believe him. A lot of Greeks believe exactly what you played, just that soundbite right there. I would venture that many, if not most, however, feel that he's pushing it too far. And given what we heard yesterday from European leaders, such as Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi, French President François Hollande, as well as the head of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, they believe that this referendum really is a euro in or out referendum. Mm. It's not part of some brinkmanship game. It is a choice on the currency.
Yeah. Let me listen to Greece's finance minister here. He's responding a couple of days ago to the refusal of the European Union to give Greece an extension following the decision of the Greek government to hold a referendum. Here's that.
The refusal of the Eurogroup today to endorse our request for an extension of this agreement will certainly damage the credibility of the Eurogroup as a democratic union of partner member states, and I'm very much afraid that that damage will be permanent.
And here's the president of the Eurogroup expressing his regret about Greece's decision to go for a referendum.
That is a sad decision for Greece because it has closed the door on further talks, where the door was still open in my mind.
So the referendum goes forward, right, on Sunday, Martina? What exactly will they be voting on?
Well, both very interesting questions. Until, the latest we have is that it is going forward. And what people will be voting on is not exactly clear. Greeks are asked to vote yes or no to the copy of two documents, which currently have not even been translated into the Greek language, so they're circulated in English. They're highly technical documents that lay out the European Commission's proposals alongside the International Monetary Fund and European Central Bank proposals, which were allegedly the last offer the creditors made to Greece. Now, the creditors actually dispute that the documents that will be attached to the Greek yes or no vote are the latest offer. They're saying that there was a later one that Greece, the Greek government, has ignored. And to be honest with you, asking a population to read through documents that are so technical, which would probably take me several hours to digest and understand, and I'm an expert on this, is really just rattling some people here. Mm-hmm. You can't expect, for example, older people or people who are not like financially, literate, as it were, to respond to this, especially when such a monumental decision is riding on it.
Martina Stevens, Wall Street Journal reporter in Athens. Martina, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Now joining me from New York is Dimitra Kesanidis. She's associate editor at Bloomberg Businessweek. She co-authored this week's cover story headlined, Ouch, How Greece Can Get Past the Pain. You can find a link to our website, onpointradio.org. Dimitra, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
So what do you make of this 11th hour proposal, this last ditch effort by Athens to resolve an impasse with its lenders? It's a 2-year aid proposal calling for a debt restructuring. This coming from the office of the prime minister. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Martina said. I do think that they're seeing a more panic now arising. They're frankly out of money. There have been some not very clear whether they're accurate reports or not about a couple of the banks mentioning that they don't even have enough money today to make, to allow people to withdraw even the limits that have been placed given the capital controls, the 60 euro a day limits. And so there's a lot of concern. Pensions aren't being paid in full. It's the end of the month. They they were due to be paid today. And so I think that they're looking at a situation that's really untenable. Proceeding with the referendum, as I've also heard, as you know, the latest bit of news, but anything can happen, it looks like, in the next several hours, and doing what it can to try to get some money in and keep things going. But it's very tricky. There is a lot of bad blood. There's a lot of confusion. There are conflicting messages. So it's really hard for anybody in that situation, most importantly, the Greek voters, who, again, as Matina said, I think are really confronting a much bigger vote than the way it's been presented to them. It's a simple yes or no question, but there's nothing yes or no about the situation. Mm-hmm. There's much more nuance and, you know, just detail to it that you can't come to understand in 5 days' time without, you know, everything before you presented in a way that's understandable to just your average person.
In a simple yes or no question. So the Greek government has previously dismissed lenders' demands of austerity as, quote, insulting, illogical, unacceptable. I mean, as the Greek people go to the polls for this referendum, is the basic question here for Greece whether it is prepared to abandon the euro, a Grexit, as it's being called?
Well, that's the question. What is the question? Some people are interpreting it that way. And you do hear the Europeans are putting it in those terms, while on the other side, Greece, the Greek government, is putting it in terms of, we're simply asking you to vote on whether you accept these measures. We're not saying that this is an exit from the euro. It's very hard to separate the two, especially, you know, there's a lot of confusion over these proposals alluded to in the earlier part of the discussion, because they were off the table as of Friday, end of day. And so what exactly are you asking people to vote on? Mm-hmm. But people are, one of the issues, and one thing that was mentioned to me by a voter in Athens yesterday, I'm in New York, but did spend the day talking to people across the country, was people are interpreting it however they can and in their own way. And that's just adding to the problem.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about a potential Grexit and the future of the euro. You can join the conversation. Greek Americans, what are you hearing from family and friends back home? Dimitra Kesanidis is with us, associate editor at Bloomberg Businessweek. Dimitra, I want to listen to the Greek Prime Minister, Alexis Tsipras. This is on Friday, announcing a referendum, this vote, on the austerity proposals made by Greek creditors.
Greek men and women, the blackmail ultimatum would mean us accepting an austere and degrading austerity without end. Nonetheless, I invite you to decide on the way forward in the sovereign and proud manner demanded by Greek history.
Calling it a blackmail ultimatum. And here's a speech delivered on Monday, Jean-Claude Juncker, the European Commission chief, appealing directly to the Greek people, urging them to vote yes in the referendum on Sunday. In the speech, Juncker says that he feels betrayed by the Greek prime minister's decision to call the referendum. Here he is interpreted by the BBC.
In one night,
la conscience européenne a pris un sacré coup.
Europe suffered a major blow.
C'est quelque peu
and goodwill was flown to the wind.
Des jeux
egotism, tactical games, populist games took precedence
après
over other aspects.
Après
and after all my efforts and the efforts made by the Commission and by other institutions involved in the process, I feel a little betrayed.
Dimitra, a lot of rhetoric here feels betrayed, egotism, populist gains, prime minister talking about a blackmail ultimatum. What do you make of this?
You know, I have to believe that on some level, of course, there are genuine feelings, but these are strong words. And of course, each of these individuals are playing to and needing to address matters in a way that takes into account fellow finance ministers, fellow leaders, lenders, the Greek public that voted for Tsipras and so on. I don't think there's not any legitimacy to some of what underlies all of this. But it's a dangerous game, as we said, and they're dangerous words. And so much of what has happened over the last several months, while certainly there's a lot of substance to the arguments on both sides. A lot, I think, of what has happened and what seems astonishing is that style over substance has really created these rifts, a brashness on the part of the Greeks. And, you know, that might just be their way. I can't say for sure that they sat down and they said, we're going to go in and we're just going to, you know, we're really going to be in their face. That's certainly at moments how they behaved. And then Europeans on the other part of the equation who maybe aren't used to that way of dealing and negotiating. And from the outset, then, that really created a very difficult environment within which to go forward with mutual respect and try to, you know, really rise above that kind of rhetoric and work something out, keeping in mind what's actually going on the ground. What are people dealing with? How are they struggling? How are we going to fix
this? Exactly my next question. What is going on the ground? Banks are closed, ATM machines generally empty. What's the mood? How are the people of Greece responding to this?
I hear very mixed things. I mean, I think the mood is definitely one of great worry and concern overall because of the capital controls. And yet the people waiting on lines yesterday, from what I was hearing, for the moment, you know, we're calm, we're respectful towards each other. There were not fights breaking out among people because there is a deep division. I see, and I think, and this morning was on the phone with a pollster in Athens with the latest numbers that she's compiling. And so, you know, you have a big divide among those who believe in this no vote, whatever exactly that means, and in a yes vote, whatever that means. And it seems to be dividing along these we're for Europe, we're not for Europe lines. And, you know, I think that Greeks are surprised by their fellow citizens and they really can't believe that it's come to this point. At the moment, the no votes seem to be surpassing the yes votes, according to this polling information from a pollster I spoke to this morning. But hour by hour, she is seeing shifts because the numbers that separate the two are fairly small, like a 7 or 8% difference, with a 15% of the population that's undecided.
Greece on the razor's edge.
But there is great concern. Yeah, it is. And so anything can happen, you know, and it's a sip. Again, not a simple yes or no, but it is a simple yes or no in the way it's framed. That, according to the pollster, is something that, you know, you can easily flip those votes. You can have each side lobby to try to persuade people to shift a vote. And when it's a question like a yes or no, you tend in these kinds of situations with referendums to see that, you know, you can get people changing, their mind at the last minute. So
here's an interview, Dimitra, with an 87-year-old man speaking to NPR, standing in line for an ATM in Greece, expressing his concern. This is interpreted by NPR.
Our politicians were saying, don't panic, don't take your money out of the bank. Then I see them on TV taking money out of the cash machines in Parliament. I don't know what to say.
Dimitra, stand by. I want to bring in another voice here. Joining me from London is Dimitri Vayanos, professor of finance and the head of the Department of Finance at the London School of Economics. Dimitri, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Angela Merkel has repeatedly said over these last few weeks, if the euro fails, Europe fails. So what are the consequences for Greece and beyond if the Greek people vote down the referendum and, in fact, exit the euro?
Well, I think that an exit from the euro would be a disaster for Greece. And we have already kind of seen the beginning of that scenario with the banks closing and kind of the country starting to disintegrate. And I think the consequences for Europe, I think, are going to be much more mild, at least in the short run. In the short kind of markets have moved with the events of the past week or two, but the movements have not been anything close to this kind of dramatic movements that some people were fearing. I think the consequences will be more for Europe would be more for the medium run that it will be have made clear that the eurozone is not permanent, that a member can leave. So I guess this is where maybe the main danger lies for Europe.
Here's German Chancellor Angela Merkel again speaking about Greece, saying that Germany is still open to negotiations.
There needs to be efforts and solidarity that are inextricably linked And if this doesn't come to fruition, the euro might fail, and this is not what we want. We want to work on this, and we made it quite clear, anything that can support Greece and whatever was suggested is still on the table. We made this quite clear. We are still prepared to help, should this be required.
And in fact, Germany's economy minister, Sigmar Gabriel, saying that even in the case of default, Germany will help the Greek people.
Klar gesagt, dass was immer passiert.
Whatever happens, that we will make sure the Greek people will be helped. Even in the case of a no at the referendum, we will not send the Greek people into the doom. But the situation has intensified by the actions of the Greek government.
So, there's Germany saying they will help, but by every account, this would be a disaster if Greece exits the euro. Beyond Greece, into Europe and globally, what is the potential impact here, Dimitri?
Well, I think that, as I mentioned, the Eurozone will have a problem with its credibility, but I think that they will try to, if we go to that bad scenario and Greece actually exit, I think that it will be portrayed as kind of a very unusual case, and certainly there will be, it's likely that what's going to happen afterwards is that there will be much kind of closer integration of the Eurozone. Now, I would say for the world as a whole, I don't know. I don't like for outside of the Eurozone. I don't see any dramatic consequences. At least, I mean, there of course there is the geopolitical issue about Greece kind of becoming this isolated kind of poor country in part of the world that is kind of problematic in the south in the southeastern Mediterranean. There is that aspect of it that is, I think, very important. But in terms of the economics, I don't think that an effect of a Brexit would be very significant.
Dimitra Kassanidis, do you agree with that, the geopolitical repercussions of this?
I do. I confess, you know, that's something I focus less on, but I think that is an issue. And, you know, because there's so much about that location and the geopolitical issues going back historically that also, you know, really underpinned a lot about Greece's desire to become a member of the European Union, seeing itself in that part of the world. You know, it was, the issues, especially as they pertain to Turkey and the relationship between Turkey and Greece are certainly a part of this. But I think that that's where these conversations about, you know, Grexit, but, you know, maybe still part of the union, and what kind of a relationship can be formed going forward that is going to try to take some of those issues into account. I think that's extremely complicated. I think there are a lot of things that are mentioned as possibilities simply to reassure people in this period of time so that people don't panic. But I do agree with what Dimitri was saying.
Let me get a caller in here. I got a lot on the line. Orlando is where we're going. David is on the line. Welcome to On Point, David. Hello.
Hi, Jane. Don't you think there's a big problem here with people trying to frame this as a fairness issue or an equality issue, saying that it's not fair to demand that the Greeks pay the money back? And we saw this with the mortgage implosion in 2008. It wasn't fair to think that people actually had to pay money back that they borrowed that they shouldn't have. And now we see it with the student loan debt, which is close to $1 trillion. People are trying to frame it as it's not fair or an equality issue to actually expect people to pay back money that they borrowed. And that is a huge, huge problem.
David, thank you. If you borrowed money, then you just have to pay it back. It's that simple, Dimitri Kassanidis.
Well, I mean, it is and it isn't. So, you know, these are amounts of money that were borrowed that we can go back and try to really reconsider and analyze why it was that they were permitted to borrow, knowing full well that they were not going to be in a position to pay a lot of this back, that they didn't have the ability to do that. I see the point that he's making. I'm not really sure what the answer is here. It is a funny way to frame it as fairness. I think sometimes the use of that word right now is also thrown around because in light of the challenges, not just of repaying the debt, but also of how much austerity really has challenged the Greek people without any attempt or any help or ability to try to say, you know, what can we do so that you can get on a path to repay these debts in a more reasonable period of time. Fairness gets to both the amount. I mean, they were certainly seeking a break on some of the debt. But many experts have also talked about the time period within which all of this has played out and the lenders really condensing everything in a way that was simply just never going to work out. Mm-hmm. That if there were a little more time in all of this and they spread it out, if they had reconsidered the repayments, I suppose, I'm not sure how much flexibility there was in that. But so I think fairness gets to a lot of things. I think the caller's point is a valid one. Is it fair? They do have these debts, they need to repay them, and yet they can't. So maybe we shouldn't be talking about fairness, but maybe we should just be talking about facing up to what the situation really is, being realistic about it, and finding a way that, you know, that moves forward and that doesn't completely disregard the fact that these were debts of theirs, and they in some part do have to pay them back.
Let's go to Gabe in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Gabe, welcome to the program. Hello.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I've been to Greece and Puerto Rico, excuse me, and Italy and Spain, you know, a couple other countries with some, you know, potential financial issues. And, you know, forgive me if this is just a general, you know, a generalization from an American tourist, but it's really striking there that, you know, they all have incredibly passionate young people, intelligent, educated, you know, but when they get out of university, there's not a lot of options. And then, you know, you go around and you see in, you know, all the cafes sitting around, like a lot of men, you know, over the age of 40. And then you see all these women doing so much work to, you know, take care of the house and the kids and, you know, everything. And, you know, it seems like that this cultural problem is, you know, it makes it difficult for them to, you know, live up to these financial commitments.
All right, Gabe, let me turn that to our guests here. Demetra, thank you very much for the call. Is there a cultural issue here? I mean, your piece, Demetra, in Bloomberg talks about a generational issue. Is there a cultural one as well?
I think there's a little bit of both. And I certainly you see a little bit of what the caller is describing. I think that's changed a lot. I think if you're in the cities versus smaller cities in Greece and villages, there's definitely been a shift. I mean, women who can work are working. They just can't afford to anymore. But there is a little bit of a cultural shift. And yet the reality of life today has made it so that it's not, I mean, lots of people are not working. It's true. And how are they spending their time? Some of them are getting €5 from their parents and going and sitting at a cafe and just nursing an iced coffee all day. They're kind of not sure what to do. But they're educated and they're very interested in finding a way out. Some resourceful ones are. They're mm-hmm. leaving, which is unfortunate. There's mm-hmm. a very substantial brain drain going on right now. And colleagues that I have here in New York who are from Greece, who always thought they would go back, are really struggling with the idea that they probably never will go back, at least not for a very long time, because they don't see what opportunities there are. But, you know, people do like to talk about the Greeks who enjoy taking their vacations. They don't like to work too hard. Some of that, I really think, is just stereotyping. And it was once true, but it's moved well beyond that for many, many years now.
Let me get another call in from Boston. Alexander is on the line. Alexander, welcome to On Point.
Thank you.
Yes.
I have two questions quickly. Why did austerity work in Ireland and not in Greece? And secondly, instead of using austerity to grind down the Greeks, because I've been there and know lots of people, why not keep the economy afloat while trying to deal with the bloated state sector, reducing its size, getting the rich in Greece to pay their taxes, and ending the kind of patronage society that was corrupted Greece after its joining the EU.
Alexander, thank you. Thank you very much. Dimitri, let me turn to you. How did Ireland, how did their austerity measures work there, and why didn't they work in Greece?
Okay, so there are two things to say here. First of all, the Irish economy is kind of much better kind of performing in general than has much better institutions than the Greek economy. I mean, its labor markets work better, its product markets work better, it's easier to set up a business, all these things. So Ireland had one problem, and this was the banks. And so once the banks were fixed, and the kind of this required some, of course, some austerity to pay the bill, everything else, the economy was ready to take off. Greece is different. Greece has lots of problems. I mean, it's from a kind of the way its economy works is kind of very much backwards in terms of most of the other eurozone countries. Mm-hmm. So it needed kind of, it was not just a fiscal issue. The banks also, of course, had problems too. But also it was all the rest of the economy that made it very difficult to address the problem.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking this hour about the Greek debt, the referendum, and what it all could mean for Europe and beyond. Here's a Greek woman speaking with NPR after getting cash from an ATM machine in Greece over the weekend, interpreted by NPR.
To tell you the truth, I'm tired of being stressed. 5 years now, we've been anxious that we're going to go bankrupt. It hasn't happened, but we keep waiting for it.
We're speaking this hour with Dimitra Kesanidis of Bloomberg Businessweek and with Dimitri Vayenos, professor of finance and the head of the Department of Finance at the London School of Economics. Let me bring in another voice now to the conversation. From Bologna, Italy, is Eric Jones, professor of European Studies and International Political Economy, director of European and Eurasian Studies at the School of Advanced International Studies at Johns Hopkins, author of The Year the European Crisis Ended and The Politics of Economic and Monetary Union. Eric Jones, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thanks for being here. Are you surprised that this has happened so quickly in Greece?
Well, I mean, surprised that they called for a referendum, yes. Surprised that this has ended badly and with a terrible political accident, not so much, unfortunately.
What do you think this means for the euro as a currency, if indeed Greece exits the Grexit, as it's being called? Will the shared currency in Europe fall apart, to your mind?
Well, hopefully that won't happen, particularly since I live here in Italy, and that means I would have to suffer as well. But it will have a huge impact, because the difference between a fixed exchange rate regime and a single currency is that the commitment to the inside is irrevocable. Once we see that that commitment is not irrevocable because Greece is left, then it would be reasonable for people in financial markets to start speculating about what other countries might leave as well, and that would be bad.
Even if there is an orderly restructuring, if it works out that way, the crisis obviously is far from over. So I'm curious, to your mind, what's next? Is it pension and tax reform that's needed to change, or is there something greater in Greece that needs to happen?
Yeah, so the first thing that needs to happen in Greece is that they need to fix the banking system, because right now the banks in Greece are not only losing a lot of money because people are pulling out their deposits, but they're also watching their balance sheets collapse, because the most important assets that they have are all backed by the Greek government, which is about to be in default. They've got to fix the banks, and then they have to start working on public finances, because the Greek government can't fix itself, it can't fund itself. And then finally, they have to worry about labor and product markets, which means they have to make the economy work more efficiently. But that final point is really some line down the road. If they don't fix the banks, it's all going to end badly.
A caller, Alexander, asked before the break, why such extreme austerity measures in Greece rather than using other strategies to beef up some of the things you've been talking about, the banking system, labor and product, you know, public finances? Why the extreme measures instead of sort of a more broad vision?
Well, that was an ideological choice, Jane. I mean, the Greeks have been arguing for quite a while, and not just this current government, that the key to getting out of their problem is to grow out of their problem and not to try to cut government expenditure. Unfortunately, there's a consensus in many countries in Europe, most importantly in Germany, that the best way to grow is to cut expenditure and to shrink the size of your government. I know that there are a lot of sympathetic voices in the United States on that issue. But in Europe, this obviously has not worked. It certainly hasn't worked for Greece. Had they gone for growth instead of going for austerity, the situation would be a lot better today.
Let me get another call in here from Queensbury, New York. Richard is on the line. Hi, Richard. Welcome to On Point.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm not going to be too articulate, but
I was going to say, apparently the Greeks don't have enough industry to give them enough income to pay their debts, and there seems to be something missing here. If the European Union is really a union, why doesn't the other countries in the European Union insert some industry into Greece to show them how to make some money, that and also remove taxes from the paychecks before the workers get them? That solves the money problem, and it solves the unemployment problem simultaneously.
Mm. Eric Jones, thank you, Richard. Does that sound like a plan to you?
Well, Richard, that's an excellent question. I mean, the fact is that in the early 1990s, the European Union decided to do precisely that, and we're witnessing the consequences. See, they liberalized capital flows so that money could move from Germany and other rich countries down into Greece. And the money started to flow in the 1990s. It flew a lot in the 2000s, and Greek productivity growth increased dramatically as a consequence. As a matter of fact, in the period from 1999 to 2007, Greece's productivity grew faster than anywhere else in the euro area, apart from a country like Finland. Hmm. The problem is that when they pulled all that money back out again in the context of the crisis, it left the Greeks with no cash to do business with. And that's what we've been witnessing since 2009, is what happens to an economy when all the money gets drained out because the people who invested it want it back before it's ready.
Hmm. Here's Bill in Hull, Massachusetts. Hi, Bill. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jay. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have one question. Your guests have very eloquently explained the dire consequences of either a yes or a no vote to Greece and to the European economy. And I'm wondering, why is it that national bankruptcy isn't even discussed? Mm. It's not even one of the options on the table. It would seem to me that it would be better for Greece's creditors to get, you know, 10 cents, 20 cents, 30 cents back on the dollar through a bankruptcy proceeding, somewhat similar to what Detroit went through here in Michigan in the United States, rather than to look at the drastic, dire consequences that your guests have explained would flow from either a yes or a no.
Bill, thank you. Thank you so much. Eric Jones, why not?
Bill, that's a great question. You see, the problem in Europe and what makes Europe different from the United States is that the banks in Greece all hold bank government debt. So if we bankrupt the Greek state, we bankrupt the banks as well. And that's why Greece is in a crisis right now. If we could find a way to let the Greek state go bankrupt without wiping out the financial system, we would do that. In the United States, we can do that because the financial system rests on U.S. government debt. So when Detroit goes bankrupt, that doesn't mean all the Detroit banks go down with it. Unfortunately, in Europe, there are no euro bonds like we have U.S. treasuries. And so when Greece goes bankrupt, it takes the banks as well.
And so, Eric Jones, what could a Greek exit mean for financial markets? U.S. stocks had their worst day of the year so far yesterday. What does this mean happening so far away? What does this mean for the United States?
Well, what it's going to mean for the United States in the short order, I think, is not very much. And here, I think Dimitri had it right on the money. What we have to look at is the medium and longer-term implications. In the medium term, what's going to happen is we're going to start to see people in the financial markets begin to speculate against countries like Italy and Spain. The European Central Bank, which is the central bank for the common currency, will be able to stop that through most of the summer. But toward the end of the summer, its buying power is actually going to be constrained. And when people wake up to that, I think the crisis is going to return to Europe, and that will have a big impact on the U.S. Over the long run, what it means is that the dollar is going to remain the international currency. There was time when we thought that the euro might take its place, but that time seems to have passed.
Dimitra Kesanidis, your headline on the cover of Bloomberg Businessweek reads, quote, "How Greece gets past the pain." How does Greece move past this at this point, do you think?
Well, we were looking at really, you know, the opportunity that exists, whether it's 15, 20, 25 years away or 5 years away, with respect to the resources that it has and the opportunities. So it was a little longer term, and it isn't, you know, there was a lot of optimism expressed. Now, that we finished that story before the latest developments, and this, it really picked up and casts a very different light on some of it. But there are a lot of people who believe that even no matter what the outcome, there are ways to exploit the existing industries that performed very strongly, like tourism, as strongly as it's been doing. There's so much more potential there, more opportunity to bring investors in. There's a big question right now, though, especially given what's happening today and this week, about, you know, what it will take for investors to feel like they can go back into Greece. So how does it get? I mean, I think this is a short-term, long-term question. Mm-hmm. Right now, we have to look at getting past this week, making it past this referendum, doing what we can to ensure that, you know, the Greek voters have enough information to adequately cast their votes. And then based on that, you know, I don't know, it's a big unknown because we are hearing very conflicting reports about what it will mean depending on whether the vote is yes or no. Quick. In the long term, you know, you mentioned tax reform, pension reform. You know, Eric touched on some of this before, but these are problems that remain that will always need, you know, I mean, they're going to need to address these in a much more aggressive and serious way, in a way really looking at very seriously their whole form of governance and what Greek people think their government is, what it's there for, and what they expect from it.
Quick prediction, Eric Jones, you get the last word. Your prediction for the upcoming referendum in Greece, this yes or no vote.
I think it's too close to call. I'm sorry to be so wishy-washy about that.
Eric Jones, director of the Eurasian Studies Program at the School of Advanced International Studies at Johns Hopkins. Thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you, Jane.
Dimitri Vayanos, professor of finance and the head of the Department of Finance at the London School of Economics. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And Dimitra Kesanidis, associate editor at Bloomberg Businessweek. Dimitra, thank you.
Thank you very much.
In a moment, Puerto Rico is out of cash and says it needs more time to pay its debts. This is On Point. On Monday, the governor of Puerto Rico announced it could no longer pay its more than $70 billion of debt to its creditors. The governor is asking for more time and calling for unprecedented changes in bankruptcy rules to save the island from default. Joining me now from San Juan, Puerto Rico, with the latest is Danica Cotto, Caribbean-based reporter and editor for the Associated Press. Danica, welcome to On Point.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. We've been talking about Greece and its financial problems. How did Puerto Rico get to this point? How did the U.S. end up with its own version of Greece here?
Well, it's been several decades in the making. Past administrations have continuously borrowed money, and a lot of times revenue projections have systematically exceeded collections. And it's arrived to the point where Puerto Rico basically, some experts say, is essentially broke. So right now they don't have the money to make the payments that are coming up. There's a payment due tomorrow, actually, for the public power company. And it remains to be seen whether, you know, these upcoming payments, whether the government can meet them, and if not, what kind of action bondholders might be taking. Mm.
On Monday, Puerto Rico's governor, Alejandro Garcia Padilla, asked Puerto Ricans in a televised address, that they be allowed to restructure debts under a bankruptcy code that the United States uses. Here's that interpretation by Reuters.
La meta será lograr una moratoria negociada con los bonistas.
The goal would be to achieve a negotiated moratorium with the bondholders to postpone for a number of years the debt payments in a way that we could use that money to pay the debt and invest here in Puerto Rico to create jobs and accelerate the economy.
Puerto Rico para crear empleos.
Is that a possibility, Danica Cotto, using U.S. bankruptcy code to sort of deal with this and wrap this up in Puerto Rico?
Well, it's definitely a possibility the government is pushing for. In their eyes, that would be the best option. Right now, the governor is creating a new finance team. And this finance team is charged with sort of developing a financial and economic reform plan that they have to present by the end of August. And so it's unclear what kind of plan they have to present, but it has to be a strong enough plan to bring bondholders to the table and sort of get them to agree to a debt moratorium. Mm-hmm. And absent that, the next step would be, you know, pushing to allow to file for bankruptcy under Chapter 9.
Treasury Department officials have been shuttling between Washington and San Juan to encourage officials there to close these budget gaps, and they have repeatedly said that a federal bailout is not on the table. To your mind, from what you're seeing and hearing and reading, is a financial lifeline from Washington an option?
Probably not. I think Puerto Rico, in many experts' view, needs to step up itself. They have taken several measures. There's actually a new an increase in the sales tax going on tomorrow, that's being implemented tomorrow, in addition to other taxes later in the year. But right now, I think the government, aside from still pushing for the ability to file under Chapter 9, is planning a complete overhaul, economic and fiscal reform, that it hopes will convince bondholders to give it a debt moratorium.
And what about the U.S. economy, Danica? If Puerto Rico doesn't pay its debts, what are the implications for the U.S. economy?
Well, it depends. A lot of the bonds were being held by mutual funds. And as Puerto Rico's economic crisis worsened, a lot of hedge funds started buying those up. So originally, you had a lot of people who, you know, had these bonds, were usually retirees hoping to make extra income. And right now, a lot of hedge funds have bought those bonds, especially the ones by the troubled public power company, which holds about $9 billion in debt. And they might be more willing to possibly entertain the idea of a moratorium to recover their money. So it remains to be seen whether that agreement might be reached, and if so, it might not have that much of an impact if a lot of mutual funds were still holding that debt. Mm.
Part of this, as I've been reading, stems from U.S. military base closings at the end of the Cold War in Puerto Rico, corporate tax breaks ending in 2006, which meant an exodus of pharmaceutical companies and other manufacturers from Puerto Rico. The migration to the U.S. mainland accelerated, of course, shrinking the tax base. And Puerto Rico has a welfare issue, too. I mean, the share of working-aged population on disability is about 50% higher than in the United States. Is that correct, Danica?
That's correct. There's a lot of concern, especially the labor participation rate. I mean, the number of people who are employed here looking for employment is about 40%, and the U.S. rate is about 60% or so. And in addition, a lot of people say, well, why am I going to give up my benefits? Why am I going to give up being on welfare when I get paid less for being on a job and I don't get my housing covered? And in addition to that, living costs here are quite, the cost of living here is quite high, especially with the power bills. And Puerto Rico is about, has a 60 or 70% reliance on petroleum to run things here. So, you know, you add all that up and people are looking at the cost of living and they say, well, it benefits me to be on welfare rather than making a low-paying job and, you know, getting all my benefits stripped.
Well, so much to watch. We really appreciate your time and sharing this information with us. Danica Coto, Caribbean-based reporter and editor for the Associated Press out of San Juan, Puerto Rico. Danica, thank you so much.
Thank you for your time.
You can continue the conversation, listeners, and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. Listeners, thanks to you as well. This is On Point.